Strangers, before we jump in, I am considering doing a Real Housewives of Rhode Island live watch party for members of Grab Bag Collab at the Everything GBC Live Plus level. If this sounds like something you might be into, head to grabbagcollab.com to sign up and shoot us a quick message from there to let us know you're interested in the Real Housewives of Rhode Island watch parties. Why not? Enjoy the show. What if the most fantastical stories people tell really were true? What if our understanding of reality is limited to what we've been taught to believe is truth and fact? What if the lines were blurrier? What if the places we went to in dreams really exist in some other dimension we can only access during REM sleep? What if the hallucinations people who are deemed mentally ill have are real? And those of us with so-called healthy brains can't see them because our eyes aren't open to that reality. What if the veil between realities could be lifted? Imagine the stories we would all have. Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I have had vivid dreams all my life. In these dreams, there are places that I visit again and again that don't, to my knowledge, exist in real life. Usually, it's the neighborhood in Brooklyn in which I grew up, but it's pockets of the neighborhood I don't recognize and don't know, so I end up getting lost on my way back to my childhood home. Why has my brain created these places? But I've also had dreams that felt so real that when I've realized in the middle of them that I am in fact dreaming, I am extremely confused. I dreamt recently that I was standing in the kitchen of the house I grew up in making coffee. My husband and my parents were there. As I made the coffee, I thought about taking a cup out to the backyard to enjoy the garden my parents had curated over the 40-plus years they'd lived there. It was in that moment that I remembered something about AstroTurf. AstroTurf? Wait, there's AstroTurf where my mother's chives and strawberries were. There's AstroTurf, where the tomato plant that was almost as big as me delivered me my first bee sting on my chubby little hand when I reached in to grab its prized fruit. There's AstroTurf, where the lilac bush I bought my mother the Christmas before she died, in a desperate attempt to ignore the fact that she wouldn't live long enough to see it bloom, still stood when I brought my own child back to see the garden with the tomato bushes almost as tall as them. I stood at the coffee maker so confused. I honestly could not understand what was happening. The thought struck me then that I must have been inside a dream. But how could that be? I thought, I really am here in this house. There's the table I did my homework at while my mother drank red wine from a tiny glass and listened to All Things Considered while she made dinner. Here's the counter I learned to cook at. Here's the clay sugar jar. There's my husband and my father and my stepmother, standing there as clear as day. But then there was the AstroTurf. Your parents sold this house, I told myself inside the dream. The couple who bought it laid AstroTurf down on the 42-year-old garden so that their child would have somewhere safe to play. Because chives and strawberries and lilacs are not suitable playthings for children. Because tomato bushes hide dangerous bees and we cannot have that around children. And suddenly, the walls around me began to melt away like a watercolor painting in the rain. And I awoke with such a sure feeling that I really had been there in my childhood home. What if I really was there? What if, in my dream state, I'm able to access other timelines? What if there's a timeline where I somehow had enough money to buy the house from my parents so that they could move to somewhere more accommodating for their advanced age, and my mother's garden is still thriving? What if those neighborhoods I find myself in, familiar yet not, are places I lived in other timelines, in other dimensions? Maybe that's why they are familiar to me. What if people who claim to be able to astrally project themselves really can actually astrally project themselves into other times or places or dimensions? Despite my snarkiness about it in the episode I did on astral projection back in season 2, maybe it is real. The more I learn, the less I know. And it is with that rather meandering introduction out of the way that I present to you today the story of a woman who claimed to have seen, impossible things. A story told almost exclusively through her own words because, as you'll see, there weren't any secondhand accounts to back her up. A story so easy to dismiss as one woman's delusions that it might be more interesting to wonder, what if? What if this all happened? What if Elizabeth Clarer could access worlds most of us cannot? And what if her visions were a product of the propaganda around her? Warning, dear stranger, that some racist depictions of colonized people are to come in this episode. But, of course, not without intense scrutiny from moi. Elizabeth Woollett was born on July 1, 1910, in what was then called Natal Province in South Africa, but what is now KwaZulu-Natal. Her father was a successful veterinarian and had a shorthorn cattle farm. I don't know what her mother did, but it was likely whatever a veterinarian and farmer's wife did at the turn of the 20th century. Namely, run the entire household. Though we do know that her mother came from English aristocracy and played piano well enough, at least, to play Mozart. Anyway, when Elizabeth was 7 years old, she and her sister were out feeding a litter of puppies when, as she recounted in her 1980 memoir Beyond the Light Barrier, the autobiography of Elizabeth Clarer, and don't worry, stranger, I'm not even going to try to attempt a South African accent. You're welcome. Quote, an enormous silvery disc swooped down toward us, moving with a changing brightness out of the clear expanse of sky. A globe of light as clear as a pearl. Fascinated, we watched it maneuver over us while the puppies left their food and ran yelping into the kennel. Then suddenly, another huge sphere fell out of the sky, rolling down toward us, glowing orange-red and rotating slowly as it came, pockmarked with craters like the moon. A fiery and terrifying planetoid was silently and gracefully sweeping through the upper reaches of Earth's atmosphere. And as it slowly rotated, suspended on its course toward us, the silvery disc moved with a flash of light and paced beside it in a slow passage across the sky until the planetoid moved out of the sun's rays to the north, leaving a long, thick trail like smoke across the heavens. End quote. The girls ran into the house and excitedly relayed their experience to their parents. Quote, my father got up and walked to the edge of the long veranda and looked up into the sky. Perhaps it was a meteor, he said. No, no, I insisted when I got my breath again. Something out there saved Earth, our beautiful planet, from a ravening, desolate asteroid intent on a collision course and destruction. I paused and then said, and something out there, a beautiful spaceship from elsewhere, came in time to see our plight. End quote. Elizabeth's dad was like, in time? How do you know? But my question is, what kind of seven-year-old talks like this? Even if they were aristocratic or whatever, ravening? Desolate? I don't know. Anyway, in answer to her father's questions, in time, how do you know? Elizabeth simply answered, yes, I know. I can only assume Elizabeth had received some kind of telepathic message during this experience. It seems to me she makes an awful lot of assumptions about the why of what she said she'd just witnessed. If she'd had an editor, which I don't know that she did, the editor would have noted, how does the narrator know this information? She is not omniscient. In fact, the first mention Elizabeth makes of telepathy is about 13 pages later when she says, quote, being aware of their presence in our skies, I practiced telepathy with horses, dogs, and cats, and even with plants, machines, or anything with the electric spark of life. I found this to be of great value in my experience through the years. End quote. We can debate the likelihood of this, of course, but we are trying to approach this with an open mind. And so, for the sake of argument, if Elizabeth claimed she could telepathically communicate with a toaster oven, we're just going to go with it. For now. Though it begs the question, what does a toaster oven have to say? I am toasting? I am not toasting? Does a toaster oven have self-awareness? It toasts, therefore it is? I should probably pause real quick right here to point out that this is a story written by a white woman from colonized South Africa. This is important in the next section, where I will quote from her book a story she claimed to have learned from a black farmhand named Laddam, who worked for her father. Strangers, my kid's cell phone bill for the entire year on Mint Mobile is less than 1 month on my old premium plan. No joke, I paid less than $160 for the entire year, including tax. Stop overpaying for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. You can bring your own phone number and activate with an eSIM in minutes and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for just $15 a month. With Mint Mobile, we have peace of mind that we can reach Monty anywhere, anytime with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network, included in all plans. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/strange. That's mintmobile.com/strange. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. In her memoir of otherworldly recollections, Elizabeth Clarer mentioned another key incident in childhood that, upon reading, is very hard to disentangle from the colonization that found her in South Africa to begin with, and the warped telling of stories that came with that reality. According to Elizabeth, Laddam said that her golden hair would call forth the, quote, Abelungu, white people, from the sky, and there will be a meeting together. They are the sky gods who once lived on this world, but afterward ascended to the sky over our heads by means of the spider's thread in clouds of lightning and thunder, end quote. Here, Elizabeth describes the story Laddam told in his, quote, Zulu tongue, which she supposedly understood. She says she could sense his, quote, sincere belief and the ring of truth in his narrative. According to her memoir, the tale Laddam told Elizabeth went like this, quote, Once upon a time, a man and a woman came down from the sky on a cloud and alighted upon a hilltop. They were white and shining, with hair of gold. Their village is said to be lighted by a mightier light than any of this world. The people wear shining clothes and the huts are thatched with shining grass. They were caught up to heaven again by a flash of lightning. They are goodly to look on, beautiful and radiant. Their clans are taller and lighter complexioned and markedly different in feature. These heaven dwellers will return with the lightning bird whose scales glitter in many colors. It is blue or gold, or it is red or green, like a metallic iridescence. And when you are a grown woman, you will go to the mountaintop, and there you will wait for the heaven dwellers, and there will be a meeting together, a mating. You belong to the heaven dwellers. We know this. The Mefiti, witch, has told us. There, he said with a long, drawn-out breath and pointed a gnarled finger, there on the mountaintop, the lightning bird, whose blue and gold scales glitter in many colors like the rainbow, will come for you. The heaven dwellers used to live here in a big land far to the south, but afterward ascended to the sky by means of the spider's thread from the lightning bird. Some of our people have gotten into the heaven country by climbing a mountain or a tree, ascending by means of a rope uncoiled from a cloud, or by the thread the spider obligingly spins for them. The Zulu say, "Who can plait a rope for ascending, that he may go to heaven?" Into the sky, for Zulu means the sky, and we Zulu have long had a high opinion of ourselves to be tall like the sky, and not mingle with the lesser tribes of black peoples. Our destiny lies in the proud aggression of our Zulu army who await the return of our sky gods. End quote. Listen, I'm not qualified to speak on the history of intertribal discrimination, though I do doubt that Black people started discriminating amongst themselves based on how dark or light their skin was before white people came in and started doing it for them. And it is hard to imagine that this origin story involving heavenly white people actually originated from before white people colonized the land. I think the very idea of a person with non-melanated skin wouldn't have occurred to anyone before they saw one. Why would it? The idea that a group or tribe of people might side with their colonizers, while hard to imagine, is something that definitely happened and happens. Though I believe it comes less from a belief that the colonizers are heavenly beings, and more from a position of self-preservation. And, side note, the Zulu people, the largest ethnic group in South Africa, experienced widespread violence and cultural appropriation throughout the colonial era in which Elizabeth lived. Even up until the publication of her memoir, the infamous apartheid legal system in South Africa was still in place. And so, sharing this warped, colorist, and by proxy racist imagining of Zulu belief is violent as well. Again, we will take in her story before we rip it up later, but it's necessary to pause and acknowledge its effect. At any rate, Elizabeth, now armed with the knowledge of shining white gods in the sky that will be summoned by her golden hair, then says, quote, "A black cloud gathered to the east with sudden jagged flashes of forked lightning playing about its flat base. As the menacing cloud moved closer, I cried out with delight as we both saw the great silvery spaceship glowing with a white radiance against the awesome cumulonimbus. The terrible broad funnel of a tornado began to form from the base of the cloud, swaying and twisting as it reached downward toward the ground, moving swiftly and haphazardly along its destructive path and heading up the valley toward the homestead." End quote. She says her mother stood at the window with, quote, "sudden wonder in her eyes as she caught a glimpse of the spaceship moving across the terrifying tornado," end quote. She does not clarify if she verified this with her mother or not. There's no follow-up conversation where her mother goes, "oh my God, did you see that spaceship?" So again, we have to just sort of trust the narrator here. The wonder in her mother's eyes may have been sheer terror that her daughter was standing so close to a massive tornado. We'll never know. She then claims to have stood inside the tornado itself, and though it seems she wants the reader to understand that this was another instance of contact with an alien craft, especially considering how physically impossible it would be for a small child to just stand there as a tornado moved around her and surrounded her, it does, in the end, just sound like a tornado. Eventually, some years later, Elizabeth went to Europe to study and met her first husband, Captain W. Stafford Phillips. The couple wed in 1932 and had a child. But, quote, "even marriage and the birth of my first child could not ease my longing. My husband chided me on being so restless and flew me into the sky in a tiger moth biplane, teaching me how to fly. Encouraged by his understanding, I would fly off into the depths of blue, seeking the ship of space in her own environment." End quote. And then, according to her memoir, it was on a flight in South Africa in clear weather with her husband when Elizabeth had another encounter. Quote, "I was spellbound by another sphere flashing out of the dark azure of Earth's shadow. It was blue-white and pulsating, and it moved with incredible velocity straight for our tiny, helpless plane. I tapped my husband on the back of his neck. He looked around and saw the enormous craft slow its speed, changing color to a brassy yellow as it leveled out and paced our plane. I observed every detail as I pressed my nose against the starboard window, seeing the bright, hazy outline of the great circular ship as it paced alongside. Three portholes, shedding a softer glow, looked out from the side of a dome that sloped up from a vast hull. Beneath the hull, an intense blue-white light alternated with deepest violet, and no sound reached my ears above the frightened roar of the plane. Suddenly, the great ship flipped onto its side, rolling along like a vast wheel, and then, with a brilliance of intensified light emanation, it disappeared, vanished, end quote. Elizabeth says that as soon as they landed, her husband reported the incident to the Air Force headquarters. As far as I can tell, there is no record of that report. It's probably top secret. Back in England, where her husband was stationed at the Havilland Experimental Flight Center, Elizabeth was fighting an internal battle that many of us might recognize today. Looking out on the Air Force base at the various machines of war, she wrote, quote, "To destroy one's fellow creatures and one's planet is a reflection of mass insanity. Violence and destruction are but a symbol of power for the race of humankind on Earth. Vast masses of people who are barely evolved beyond savage, flesh-eating murderers. They are barbarians whose one ambition is to destroy. The way of tolerance and coexistence with all nature is not yet understood. Instead, a twisted state of mind exists, spawned by centuries of wrong thinking and living in all social systems set up by people of Earth. Humankind of planet Earth is thereby a product of its environment," end quote. Agreed. Anyway, it was on the base that Elizabeth claims to have been summoned by someone she only refers to as the Chief. This may be the late Air Chief Marshal Lord Dowding, whom she mentions in the acknowledgments at the beginning of the book, but I don't know. So the Chief calls Elizabeth into his office and tells her he read the report she and her husband made of their encounter in South Africa. Quote, "It is as I suspected," the Chief replied. "Our planet is under close surveillance by an alien but highly advanced civilization from outer space." He paused for a moment, looking at me intently. "And you, my dear, seem to be dedicated to this. You know what to look for. You are not afraid. And I can think of no one more qualified. Besides, you have intuition and imagination, which is very important in this advanced research. Will you do it for us?" "Of course I shall do it," I answered without hesitation. "Thank you, my dear," the Chief said. "I feel sure something will come of this. Help and guidance will be given to the sorely afflicted peoples of this planet who seem unable to live in peace and harmony. And as you know, you have been thoroughly vetted. We know the full history of your family and its ancient lineage. This research may take you many years," he went on. "Therefore, every detail of information must be given to me, no matter how fantastic. We are dealing with a fantastic realization. I want you to use your powers of extrasensory perception and follow up any hunches you may have. This extraordinary ability you are so liberally endowed with can be of tremendous value to us." End quote. Listen, I know, this is giving beautiful mind vibes. I'm pretty sure this isn't how anything works. I would hope, at the very least, that while being recruited into what had to have been the most top secret governmental mission, she wasn't called my dear. Like, at least have enough respect to call her Mrs. Captain Phillips. She is the captain now. But also, like, a military officer is bemoaning the fact that humans don't know how to live in peace and harmony? Physician, heal thyself. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so now Elizabeth had a co-conspirator, someone who would enthusiastically co-sign whatever she claimed to have experienced. Not only that, but the entire future of the species was looking to her to save them. According to her memoir, before they were sent back to South Africa, the Chief told her to find the ship at any cost because, quote, "it could mean the salvation of our planet and our race," end quote. Yikes. I really hope he meant the human race, but also, like, yikes. It was at this time that Elizabeth began practicing her telepathy on plants, animals, and toaster ovens. And her story of intergalactic heroism was about to become pretty personal. Strangers, if your morning coffee isn't cutting it lately, start your day with something better. Our next sponsor makes bone broth that hydrates, nourishes, and wakes you up without spiking your nerves or blood sugar. If you're like me and you don't like the taste of traditional bone broth, you'll love Brodo. Brodo comes in 8 delicious flavors, from classic chicken to the spicy Nona to more creative blends like ginger turmeric, herb-infused, or veggie-based broths. I recommend trying their sampler pack so you can figure out for yourself what flavor is best for you. The coconut lime curry is my favorite. Last year, I bought Tom Kha paste and mixed it with chicken broth and coconut milk every morning for a healthy thing to sip on all day. But the store-bought Tom Kha paste was filled with preservatives and sugars. With Brodo, I get the flavor I love without the hassle or unneeded ingredients. Each cup of Brodo delivers about 10 grams of whole food protein, along with collagen-building amino acids, electrolytes and nutrients to support gut health, immunity, joints, skin, and general wellness, all under 50 calories and with zero sugar or fat. And Brodo is great for cooking, too. Whether you're making soup or sauce or using it as a base for gravy, it's an easy and healthy addition to your home-cooked meals. Shop the best broth on the planet with Brodo. Head to brodo.com/strange for 20% off your first subscription order and use code STRANGE for an additional $10 off. Once again, that's brodo.com/strange for $20 off your first subscription order and an additional $10 off if you use my promo code STRANGE. During this time, it seems, Elizabeth had developed a theory of time travel, either through her telepathic communications or perhaps by studying theoretical physics. I don't know. But she came to believe, quote, if we knew how, we could control the variable nature of time, as time is a wave motion in a triple unity with light and gravity. Perhaps we could find an alternating wave motion in time and escape to the stars. I felt sure that this was already a reality for an advanced civilization out there whose spaceships could move in a stream of time in reverse to our time. Perhaps they would help us to find these secrets to interstellar travel if we could forge a link with them. And the link, I knew, would indeed be found through love. End quote. As she continued to train her mind to be attuned to the cosmic link, she wrote, quote, in the understanding of universal harmony, I knew his name within my soul, and I knew that he was there within the spaceship, end quote. Elizabeth doesn't fuck around with dates much in her book. Her timeline is a little unclear, but at some point after returning to South Africa, she and her husband were involved in an awful explosion at an airplane hangar. While she recovered in the hospital, she had a vision of the spacecraft on which she knew the object of her intergalactic love dwelled. Back at home on the farm one evening while meditating, she teleported herself into the sky and came face to face with an alien. This section reads, quote, two spaceships were hovering in the clear sky. Akon's ship lowered a little, and I knew we had found each other. This brought me into close communication, a bond of affinity and love with Akon, who assured me of his physical presence and transmitted much information about his way of life, where he came from, and the great civilization of his people, end quote. By this point, Elizabeth and Captain Phillips divorced, and I believe she had already married and divorced her second husband, Paul Clarer, with whom she had a son. Some months after this experience, Elizabeth suddenly got the feeling that Akon was back, and she ran up a hill where she found a silver spaceship parked on a hilltop, and just like in a romance novel, quote, beside it stood a tall man. I looked at him with awe, and I could feel my beating heart. In that wonderful moment, I didn't hesitate, but I ran down the rough slope, straight to the man beside his ship. Within seconds, I was at his side. Laughing gaily, he caught me round the waist and swung me up onto the hull of his ship. We both laughed as though it was the most natural thing in the world. Holding me close in his arms, he smiled gently as I looked up into his kind gray eyes. I have known your face within my heart all my life, I answered. I am not from any place on this planet called Earth, he whispered with his lips in my hair. He carried me into the cabin of his spaceship and set me down on a soft, circular bench. End quote. Akon, Elizabeth tells us, is, quote, an older gentleman, well past middle age, with a strong and lithe body, just under 2 meters in height. End quote. He had blonde hair that was graying at the temples, high cheekbones, and light gray eyes that slanted towards his temples. He wore a tight-fitting jumpsuit, shimmering with a silvery sheen. And then, quote, my beloved, he whispered, there is no need for you to say anything. I know everything. I have observed you before. It is a knowledge and understanding that we share, and you now belong to me. It was only necessary for me to wait until you had grown up in this knowledge and understanding. To be one of us, you must think as we do. I observed you first when you were a child with your sister in the garden of your home in the valley adjoining the hill. At other times, I have watched you growing up, flying through the skies of Earth looking for me, and I watched while the lightning high in the sky wrapped you with its purifying flame to make you mine. It has been a lifetime for me, I whispered back. Your delicate face is still filled with wonder and awe, he answered. Gathering me into his arms, he kissed me on the lips. A magical, electric current seemed to fuse us together in an eternity of ecstasy. In that moment, I knew that the art of love was of the mind and soul, not only of the body. End quote. If you think I'm uncomfortable with this dude telling her he'd been watching her since she was a child, you're right. And then Akon said this, quote, beloved one, I shall be with you always. Our destiny is bound together. A telepathic link binds our souls in eternal love. Our lives are entwined as a thread of gold weaves a pattern in the sky. My love, my life, my chosen mate, I will return to possess you and sow the seed of my love within your delicate body. The mark of my love will remain within your soul forever. End quote. Not possessing and sowing seeds. Yuck. And according to her fanfic-seeming romantic retelling, there'd be more to his story. Strangers, I am surprising my husband this year for Father's Day with a subscription for Storyworth. Kurt is really into digging into his family history and finding out where everyone came from and what their lives were like. Storyworth will give him a chance to document those stories in a beautiful keepsake book at the end of the year. Each week, Storyworth will send Kurt thoughtful questions that he can curate to spark his creativity. And here's the thing, you don't need to be writing your own memoir or your family history to enjoy Storyworth. You can use the prompts to help you write a novel or a collection of short stories. Why not? And you know what's coming up before Father's Day? Mother's Day. Get a mother in your life the gift of memories that she can pass down for generations to come. And with Storyworth's unlimited plan, you can buy it once and you'll be able to give Storyworth memoirs to friends and family all year. Plus, it comes with all their newest features and multiple full-color book copies. That means you can get all your Mother's Day gifts for your mom, grandma, and any mom figures in your life, plus take care of Father's Day while you're at it. This year, give mom a gift that helps her reflect on her life with a fresh perspective and gives your whole family the gift of her stories. Mother's Day is Sunday, May 10th. Order right now and save up to $20 at storyworth.com/daisy. Save up to $20 at storyworth.com/daisy. storyworth.com/daisy. Akon explained to Elizabeth that humans aren't evolved enough to enjoy all the wisdom the universe has to offer. His people, he tells her, once lived on Earth, where they'd moved to from their home planet, Venus, after their scientists told them the cosmic cycle of the solar system would mean the sun could no longer sustain life on Venus. Quote, Our great civilization flourished for thousands of years on Earth before we moved out to a neighboring solar system where the stars are stable suns suitable for our way of life. We left some of our people on Earth and on Mars, but through the centuries, the environment of the variable star, the sun, had had a negative effect on their thinking and way of life. They became thoughtless and destructive, nearly wrecking Earth many times and turning Mars into a desert, end quote. Akon explained that his people couldn't stay on Earth long because of all the pollution and smog. Girl, same. He then likened the people of Earth to sea slugs, saying, quote, "The stage of evolution reached by humankind on Earth forbids any form of communication or support. Only when they change their attitude of mind, when they become gentle and peace-loving and have the ability to love and cherish all fauna and flora on their planet, will we contact them. They crawl and live upon the bottom of their atmospheric seas like slugs of the airy depths, attuned to their immediate environment. Gone is the enlightenment of yore. Gone is the ideal life of the great universal civilization, moving in rhythm with the universe." End quote. Honestly, stranger, if I had a nickel for every time I said this kind of thing, I'd be a rich man. Akon's home planet, he told her, is in the Alpha Centauri system, where his people inhabit all seven planets. Alpha Centauri is about 25.3 trillion miles away. Now, you know me, stranger, I'm no mathematician, but I think that would take us sea slugs on Earth between 70,000 and 100,000 plus years to travel that distance. But, of course, using the time travel method Elizabeth had come up with, I suppose, that distance would be a piece of cake. When Elizabeth returned home from this encounter, her maid told her she'd seen a magic wagon in the sky. Apparently, the maid wasn't the only one. Some locals had witnessed Elizabeth's return to Earth from the spaceship, and news quickly spread, and soon newspapermen and UFO enthusiasts were hounding Elizabeth at her home, peppering her with demands for more information. But, she says, the tone of the inquiries changed to threats of, quote, abduction if I refused to hand over scientific details of the flying saucer and its propulsion systems. The danger to me and my family increased daily. Threatening telephone calls and letters made our lives increasingly difficult and fraught with danger, even in our own home, end quote. She went to the local authorities, who assigned a former police officer as security detail to her home. Who paid for this is not discussed in the book. Despite the security detail and her claim that she could go nowhere alone, in 1958, Akon returned and took Elizabeth aboard his ship again. And once again, as if lifted from the pages of a romance novel, Elizabeth writes, quote, "Akon put his hand under my chin, tilting my head up and back, and he kissed me with a long and lingering kiss on the lips. Picking me up in his arms, he carried me to the silken platform by the curved wall. Its firm softness supported our bodies with luxurious comfort as I gave myself to the man from outer space. Our bodies merged in magnetic union as the divine essence of our spirits became one, and in doing so, I became whole." End quote. They had sex twice, which Akon later explained to her was to ensure she would have a boy. Something about male sperm having shorter life expectancy and Elizabeth's ovulation, I don't know, it really doesn't make any sense. Akon also told her that very occasionally his people bred with Earth humans in order to keep the genetic pool varied. And just as the chief had told her the fate of humanity rested on her shoulders, Akon told her, quote, "You, my dear, are a very positive source for changing the attitude of mind of many people upon planet Earth. You are planting the seeds of knowledge, and in time, many of these seeds will take root within the minds of humankind. People of Earth will remain in a state of turmoil and unease for another two decades before they will change and learn to respect the environment of their planet and understand the nature of the universe in which they live," end quote. LOL, two decades. Just in case you've lost track, that should have happened, according to Akon, sometime in the 70s or 80s. Ahaha, ha 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 ha. And then, in 1959, while Elizabeth was, as she claimed, carrying the intergalactic love child, Akon came back for her, this time taking her all the way to his planet, Meton. She tells us that Meton is a little larger than Earth, with vast seas dotted with islands. It is a utopia whose people are technologically and spiritually far more advanced than us sea slugs. They have no politics, law, or money, and everyone is always in perfect health. It is a world where everyone is free and there is no crime or police. Everyone works at the thing they enjoy most. Jesus, Akon, take me away. She goes on to say of the people of Meton and their society, quote, they constantly create beauty around them, and in general, there is complete harmony, end quote. Elizabeth spent 4 Earth months exploring Meton, they don't have time there, and the other planets in the Alpha Centauri solar system, and then, when it was time for her to give birth, quote, suddenly, with no effort at all, just a deep feeling of achievement and pleasure, he was born gently and smoothly, coming away with the placenta, end quote. But Elizabeth couldn't stay on Meton because the sun's vibrations weren't the right ones for her heart, obviously. So she went home, and by the time she did, she describes her son Ailing, which she says means prince in Akon's language, was no longer a baby. She didn't return empty-handed, though. She brought back souvenirs, a rose rock, some moss, and a maidenhair fern that Akon built a special container for to allow them to survive on Earth. It is unclear if she ever showed anyone these trinkets from Meton. In 1956 or 57, Elizabeth took pictures she claimed were of a spacecraft. I'm not going to spend any time on these, as the negatives were never examined, and there's really no way to know for sure if she didn't just throw a hubcap into the air and snap some photos of it. Spending too much time on the hard evidence Elizabeth brought forward in the wake of her experience would be like trying to convince a Yeti to smile for the camera. Useless. After the break, we'll come back down to Earth and hear the end of her story. Strangers, a couple weeks ago, I realized the last time I bought myself new sweatpants was 8 years ago. And let me tell you, they are no longer soft. So I headed on over to Quince and got myself 2 new pairs of super soft fleece joggers. Will I be jogging? No. Will I be wearing them every day while I work from home? Absolutely. Quince has everything. Whether you're an avid jogger, you never leave the house like me, or you work out in the real world. From jewelry to gorgeous wool coats to mulberry silk bedding, it's all at Quince for a lower price than you'll find anywhere else. That's because Quince partners directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen. So you're paying for quality, not brand markup. Quince makes beautiful everyday pieces using premium materials like 100% European linen, organic cotton, and super soft denim, with styles starting around $50. Their spring pieces are lightweight, breathable, and effortless. The kind of thing you can throw on and instantly look put together. And that same focus on materials carries over into their accessories, like their leather bags, which are made from 100% hand-woven Italian leather, and honestly, look way more expensive than they are. Refresh your spring wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/strange for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. Go to quince.com/strange for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/strange. Elizabeth claims to have continued to receive visits from Akon, though not, it seems, her star baby, Ailing. Her human son, David, had a hard time believing his mother's story, in part because he had no recollection of any of the events she claimed happened around the visits, including, it seems, her pregnancy with Ailing. Indeed, there seems to be no evidence of the pregnancy at all. While she did claim that Akon and his people were always in perfect health, and so there was no need for medicine or medical science, she was, after all, a mere earthling, and one would assume she would have needed prenatal care of some kind. Perhaps there was no need for any kind of prenatal care because the fetus was in perfect health at all times? I don't know how interspecies pregnancies work. Despite her alien lover, Elizabeth got married for a third time in 1963 to a former intelligence broadcaster for the British Army named Major Aubrey Fielding. In a piece about Elizabeth for the Sunday Times of South Africa published in 1983, Major Fielding was quoted saying, quote, "My wife's been in love with a spaceman for 20 years. That's all right with me as long as he stays in space where he belongs," end quote. Elizabeth apparently had a really hard time believing other people's claims of alien encounters. In the early 60s, as Elizabeth was getting to work on her book, a woman named Anne Grevler, also from South Africa, published her own account in a book titled Transvaal Episode, A UFO Lands in Africa. Elizabeth was unimpressed and wrote to her friend Edith Nicolaisen, a publisher at Parthenon Books, quote, "I do not believe a word of it. The author is a woman who maliciously attacked me and anyone else who had experience with space people, including George Adamski. The whole of South Africa knows about it. Our battle royale raged through every newspaper in the country until she was defeated," end quote. Colonizing the ufology space now too, eh? She also had a falling out for similar reasons with ufologist Philip Heumann. Yes, that was his name. In his own letter to Edith at Parthenon Books, Heumann quipped, quote, "With regard to Ms. Clarer, I'm afraid I shall have to disappoint you. Our correspondence came to a halt when I told her how a spaceman had contacted me through a trance medium. She gave me a severe telling off. No spaceman would stoop to such methods. Ever since, Elizabeth and I have parted ways. You will be horrified to hear that I do not believe one word of her supposed-to-be contacts, and it was a standing joke the way she was helped to photograph an ordinary motor car hubcap." That was before she added additional material to tell of her pregnancy caused by her Venusian lover and how he had taken her to Venus to give birth to this blue-eyed, fair-haired Venusian baby who would never be allowed to visit this planet but was being reared by Akon's sister. "I pray this book will never be published," end quote. Indeed, once her book was published, Elizabeth stopped speaking with the ufologist community altogether. Most people from that community are inclined to believe that Elizabeth's tale is one of fancy and an overactive imagination. Cynthia Hind, a ufologist from Zimbabwe, had tried to corroborate some of Elizabeth's claims in the early 90s and was unsuccessful. A ring Elizabeth claimed Akon had given her to aid in their telepathic communications was still in Elizabeth's possession, and she absolutely refused to let it be tested to determine the origins of its materials. Apparently, family members who have since inherited the ring have also refused its testing. Oddly, though, Hind claimed that in her investigation, she'd learned that, quote, "a hotel owner in Natal saw a tall blonde man with high cheekbones in the reception area of his hotel asking for Elizabeth. When told that Elizabeth was not a guest, he disappeared. The next week, Elizabeth arrives to check in for a stay at the hotel. The owner tells her about the man, showed her a picture, and she said it was Akon," end quote. I don't really know what any of that means, but in a piece Hind wrote for UFO Afra News in 1999, she wrote, quote, "All these factors need examination, and it is time we stopped casting aside cases like Elizabeth Clarer and Edwin, which, although sounding like hoaxes, are not obviously so," end quote. I'm not entirely sure who Edwin is, but he may have been Edwin Matthews, another man who claimed to have had some kind of alien encounter. In my research, it does seem as though most people in the community don't necessarily think Elizabeth Clarer tried to pull off a hoax, as much as they think she really did believe she had these experiences that they think most likely didn't happen. I think, for me, the fact that throws Elizabeth's story into doubt is the white supremacy of it all. First, there was the tale the Zulu farmhand told her of the race of heavenly white people in the sky, and the second edition of her book apparently excluded a couple of very troubling passages that were included in the original edition, including one incredibly racist passage in which she basically describes black people as an entirely separate species spreading across the civilizations of Earth, and warns against interspecies breeding. As if black people weren't human beings. It's also a bold statement for a woman who claimed to have fornicated with an alien dude and gave birth to his half-alien, half-human child. In plain language, this fucking sucks. It is an incredibly ugly and hateful and misinformed take. It is, however, unfortunately, a common take for a white colonialist in apartheid South Africa. I guess all the wisdom of the universe was not enough to teach her not to be really fucking racist. Elizabeth died on February 9, 1994, of breast cancer at the age of 83. One wonders why Akon didn't join her at her deathbed. He did apparently visit once in a while. She told the Sunday Times of Akon, quote, "He knows everything. He'll read your article. He's been to this cottage, but he doesn't like Johannesburg. Too much pollution. He fixed my MG the other day," end quote. I don't know what her MG is, but obviously he wouldn't have been able to fix her breast cancer because he didn't have the science for it on his planet. But if he did know everything, why didn't he perhaps warn her about her cancer when it was treatable and tell her how to cure it? I'm not here to judge the dude's relationship performance, but again, I do wonder why he didn't visit her at her hospice when she was dying. She had a portrait she'd painted of him above her bed. Of course, maybe he did visit her and no one else could see him. They often say that people in the throes of dying sometimes look as though they see someone they recognize that no one else seems to be able to see. And maybe that's the whole point. Maybe Elizabeth was attuned to more than just her immediate environment. Maybe she had the enlightenment of yore that allowed her to live in a kind of harmony with all flora and fauna of the earth. Then again, given her ugly and propagandized takes on race, it's clear she very much was grounded in the world around her, and likely was living this all out in her own mind. Maybe she wasn't quite as evolved as Akon led her to believe. Maybe Akon wasn't either, for that matter. Last night, I dreamt that I was James Bond and I could fly. But in that dream, I knew I was dreaming. I thought, well, this is a dream, so I can just fly. So what about those dreams that feel so real I can't come to terms with discrepancies, like AstroTurf, where a half-century-old garden is supposed to be, when they pop up? What about those places I visit that are so familiar and yet so foreign? What if there is some liminal space in which we really do visit these other places? What if there's a timeline where my parents didn't sell my childhood home and I can somehow find my consciousness from this timeline crossing over into that timeline? In sleep, the details of our conjured dreams sometimes stick with us because dreaming is memory processing. We may recognize details from waking life in our dream life and vice versa. Now, this isn't to explain waking visions such as Elizabeth's, rife with details of extraordinary experiences that are highly unlikely to happen, but there is some connection to memory there when you consider the colonial parallels between her visions and where and when she lived in time. When considering the racist warping of a folktale that led her to an intergalactic romance she believed would save her surrounding people, it's clear her point of view cannot be disentangled from the violence of colonization. Perhaps Akon, his ship, and their otherworldly son were a reflection of that attitude in an imagined third space plopped into her life. We'll never know what all this meant for Elizabeth, whether she was jumping timelines and dimensions or simply felt she was. A memoir of solely her perspective isn't enough to confirm an inch of it. Plus, the racist under and overtones throughout her account don't help her credibility. But we do know that the mind is a complex place for processing life lived and dreaming up possibilities for where it can go next. Here's hoping we can dream up something much better for all of humanity than Elizabeth's vision. And unlike Elizabeth, let's together take our own visions and put them into reality instead of wasting energy on fighting a community of ufologists. Next time on Strange and Unexplained. In 2016, 18-year-old Thomas Brown went out for a drive with friends and never came home. The ensuing investigation was filled with all kinds of finger-pointing, questionable motives, and a whole lot of no answers. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment and Grab Bag Collab. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, with research by Keely Hise. Editorial help from Becca DiGregorio, sound mixing and design by Jeff Devine. If you have an idea for an episode or want to submit a question for an Ask Me Anything episode, head to strangeandunexplainedpod.com and fill out the contact form. I will write back. Eventually, I need an assistant. You can follow me on social media at Daisy Egan or follow the show at SNU Pod and Grab Bag Collab. Stay strange.